What's going on, my friend? March has arrived, and we are only weeks away from the big tournament. Oh, you know, the big tournament that happens in March. Make sure you head to BetOnline and open an account today to get in on their $100,000 Bracket Madness contest starting March 15th. And remember, the NBA and XFL are still going strong. So whatever your passion is, BetOnline is the place to be for all your betting needs. Visit our good friends and exclusive partner, BetOnline, to take advantage of the best bonuses in the business. Sign up for a free account and make sure you use that promo code BLUEWIRE, all one word, for your 50% sign-up bonus. BetOnline, it's your online sportsbook experts.
It's Chris-a-mania, brother.
That's a great question. Look at you, man, with the powerful questions.
Woo!
This is the Chris Van Vliet Show.
Chris Van Vliet Show.
Ladies and gentlemen, Chris Van Vliet!
Welcome back, my friend. Thanks for joining me on another audio adventure on the Chris Van Vliet Show. This episode is brought to you by BetOnline and Untuckit. And a lot of great feedback for last week's interview, last week's show with Excalibur. I mean, there really aren't a ton of interviews out there with him, so we were able to find out a ton about him. If you haven't checked it out yet, either look it up on here. It is the last episode we did, so it's pretty easy to find. Or you can, of course, find it on our YouTube channel, which is quickly closing in on 250,000 subscribers. 240-ish thousand as we record this episode right now. Let's do this thing. 250,000 by the end of the month? Yeah. I think we can do this. Let's do this one. And this chat with Matt Stryker is a great one. He's now working behind the scenes at Impact Wrestling. I'll let him tell you specifically what he's doing with Impact. We also talk about his transition from high school teacher to wrestler to commentator, now a little bit back to wrestling and behind the scenes stuff. Of course, he worked for both WWE and Lucha Underground. And now, like I said, he's working for Impact Wrestling. I got a bunch of tweets last week telling me that the show is on the Apple Top 200, which blows my mind. This is incredible. I'm just a dude with a pair of microphones putting this podcast out into the world while almost every other podcast on the Top 200 is expertly produced in a studio with a booking producer and lots of money. And we do not have any of those things. And by we, I mean me and you. And I'm with Blue Wire, which is an incredible network that's really helped the podcast grow. So a huge thank you to Blue Wire. They're one of the big reasons I'm in the Apple Top 200 right now. But you're the main reason, though. So thank you for listening right now and continuing to listen and to continue to make these reviews on Apple Podcasts. Like this one from Jamie Turner in Scotland. The title is The Podfather. I like that, The Podfather. I ended up messaging Chris personally to let him know how brilliant his podcasts are. When it comes to interviews in the world of wrestling, Chris is the man for the job. The David Benoit episode was my personal favorite. I will also add that he's very in touch with his fans on social media. It's true, I am at Chris Van Vliet. Let's be friends. Great podcasts, great conversations, and a genuinely good guy. Keep them coming. Chris, Jamie Turner in Scotland. Wow, that's so nice. It's in Scotland. That's the extent of what my accent will be. I don't want to offend you, Jamie, or anyone else listening in Scotland or anywhere else in the UK or wherever, Great Britain, wherever you happen to be listening to this and thinking my accent's terrible, because it is. But thank you. And reading comments like that, I mean, they warm my heart. I'm super thankful. It also makes me wonder what your favorite episodes are, because I've been getting a lot of comments lately about the David Benoit interview, which, man, what a incredible conversation that was. Cracked into that whole thing. And I mean, David Benoit hadn't talked about any of this stuff really in 13 years. So that was a really interesting one. I also get a lot of comments about the MJF interview, if you can call it an interview. Also, a lot of people talk about the Big Show interview I did. It was like almost 4 years ago, but it has almost 4 million views on YouTube. One of my most watched interviews of all time. If you haven't checked it out yet, please go check it out. Also, let me know at Chris Van Vliet what your favorite interviews are. Because, yeah, I'm very responsive on there. I'm just a wrestling fan like the rest of you guys. I just happen to be able to sit down with some of our favorite wrestlers and have these conversations. So if you're listening on an iPhone, please take a few seconds to leave a review. It's the most helpful thing you can do for the show. So Matt Stryker was a high school teacher before getting his big break with WWE. Remember when he made his debut against Kurt Angle and Kurt was doing those invitational matches? Yeah. Yeah, the whole series of matches. Kurt Angle, Matt Stryker. He went on to become a big part of WWE's version of ECW and then really made his mark on the commentary team. Remember, I'm marking out, bro. We talk about that. We also talk about how he got his job with Lucha Underground, and he wasn't the first choice. They basically brought him in at the last possible second and basically just threw him to the wolves, said it's going to be you and Vampiro, boom, go. And they did an amazing job. We also talk about why Lucha kind of just faded away and how Matt's been working on the indie circuit and also working backstage for Impact Wrestling. But enough from me. Let's do this. Let's get to it. Put your hands together for Matt Stryker. Well, I figured I had Vampiro on the show recently, so so we had to have his broadcast partner on the show as well. I'm doing great.
Okay, yeah. That was good.
That was it.
See you. Okay, take care.
Bye. You're a broadcast professional.
I should. Yeah, I play one on TV.
Yeah, you
no,
do.
I saw that thing with Vamp. I thought it was great. I thought it was great for people to see sides of him that maybe only us know. So
right, no, and that happened like the very last minute. Basically, I was in Las Vegas. Someone tweeted out, "Oh, Vampiro lives there. You guys should do an interview." 10 minutes later, we were like, "Okay, yeah, we'll make this thing happen."
He's like Uber. Like you could just that's it. Yeah.
I wish all the interviews.
Your interview
were like
is
that.
3 minutes away.
I wish it was like that. Although this was good.
This was 3 minutes away.
Yeah, yeah, kind of. It was like, hey, we should do an interview sometime. And you're 100%. Like, let's do it.
And it's funny. I said to you too. I'll be honest. You know, I'm nervous. And
what?
Because when you watch someone and you like or you admire someone's work and you get to do something with them, you want to be your best. You know what I mean? There's certain times where you control a situation as an interviewer. I'm standing here with John Cena or whatever. But in this world,
yeah,
you're the Gene Okerlin, the guy. And I'm like, I got it. I don't know. Weird. Whatever.
You're working with Impact now.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's, so we're here in Las Vegas, Sam's Town Casino for the Impact tapings. And you're working backstage as a producer.
Yeah. It's funny because that term, so people will associate producer with what used to be called the agent.
Yes.
But in the sports truck world, the producer actually sits in the truck and produces the entire show from open to here comes so-and-so's music in 3, 2, 1, lose that, roll this graphic for season's beatdowns and let's get out on a commercial. So that's what I'm doing in the truck there. And that's fun.
So and I think there a distinction needs to be made there because the term producer is often a match agent or
right.
coach.
Right.
Yeah. You're on the production side of things.
Complete total aside.
I
should be like a union guy and have like black jeans.
Ah, they're blue.
Yeah, I know. But no, and it's funny because people don't realize, and I've done now enough shows across the board from WWE to Lucha Underground. You know, these are MGM productions and WWE productions. The grips and the guys that run cable and the guys that work the truck should be paid what the top guys are paid because nothing happens without them.
When you sit inside a control room or a truck for a wrestling show, it blows your mind what goes on.
Yeah. And just for all sports, so for all television,
yes, if for we just television in general, yeah.
Take a step back and see how we view media, especially now. Mm-hmm. From television now, it's like people record stuff. This isn't so much directed, but on television, there's someone pushing a button, this angle, calling this coloring of this particular background. It's amazing to me.
And it's like watching a director do their work, like ready one and take it, ready four, no, ready three, take three, ready five, nope, take two. It's insane.
That was good.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I would be a terrible director.
Seriously. Like every camera was ready and then you took someone else's
shot.
Yeah,
I did. Not ready five. Oh, I'm going to take two instead. Yeah. Zoom in on three.
Yeah. No.
Did your time in WWE prepare you for this production side of things?
So I spoke for a living. I became Sean Connery, evidently. When I wasn't wrestling, when I wasn't doing anything, I could slip out to the back truck. And the door's usually wide open. They're huge trucks. And if you find the right spot, you're standing behind like Kevin Dunn. And in the wrestling world, in the media world, that's standing behind Martin Scorsese. That's standing behind insert great director producer here.
Sure.
So I just was able to be over his shoulder watching. I did it because I enjoyed it. Did I have the idea to travel in time that it would prepare me for this? No, but I guess taking a genuine interest and then having the being fortunate enough to look over the shoulder of one of the arguably the best, having the interest and having the experience of seeing him prepared me.
So it was just out of curiosity at first.
Like everything.
Really?
Yeah.
So it's just
what's this button do?
What's this button do? Oh no. Yeah. So it was just out of curiosity. Like I kind of wonder how the machine works back here.
Yeah.
Did you have a curiosity for other aspects of the wrestling world too?
It take away the wrestling part just for how, like, this goes on here in Boston and a truck sends a satellite to my house in Long Beach, New York, and I can see that.
Yeah.
How that works. And I also realize there's a huge value in that. If you know how to do that skill, then that skill is, you know, it's supply and demand. A lot of people don't know how to do it. It becomes a commodity. They will pay you a lot of money for this skill.
Yeah.
So that to me is the biggest thing. Like, what skill can I learn? Love wrestling. Can tell you about it with my eyes closed asleep. And sometimes I do. I talk about wrestling in my sleep.
Oh, wow.
You know, and enjoy it and make some money on it.
Where was the transition from in ring to, you know, from the outside looking in for me as a fan to you moving to commentary?
There's a moment. It's fucking, this is how life is nuts, because we try and plan. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. And then you never know that one person mentions to you, hey, you know, who's really good? That so-and-so guy. Pew. It's August 5th. Joey Styles mentions in a meeting they needed a commentator for ECW, and he just piped up, hey, you know who, and I've said this, pretty much knows a lot about wrestling and won't shut up? How about Stryker? And Vince was like, okay, next thing. That's how it happened.
Wow. Just like
that. And I remember Bruce Pritchard came to me. He's like, yeah, you got to be in Atlanta, I want to say, the next day. And I didn't prepare. I still brought my boots. I still bring my boots. It's just, it's a habit. I'm working in a production truck. I do not need giant, like, wrestling boots to go through the airport. But it just was less and less as far as the punching and kicking and more just.
So when they moved you into the commentary spot, was there an audition? Was there like, let's try you out, you know, kind of like on these untelevised matches?
It was never put to me as such. It honestly was. So I'm making it up. The doors open at 6. The show starts at 7. At 4, I sat down with, I want to say, Todd, maybe. I don't remember. And they put a match
on. Grisham.
Yeah. They put a match on and they had us call it on the monitor to the truck.
Yeah.
And then I got one or two things from the producer. Hey, don't say this. Try that. Okay. That was it. And I think the trial is by fire.
Wow.
If I was as awful as sometimes I thought I was, or people tell me I was, in the beginning, they wouldn't have kept me on. So I guess each week went by, you were passable, or you weren't hard and offensive. Cool. You're something I don't have to worry about. Let me worry about John Cena's match with Adrian Adonis. That match never happened. But you know what I'm trying to say.
Isn't it funny, though, that you say, oh, you know, people tell me I was bad all the time. The funny thing about commentary especially is you're either the best or people are like, you're the worst.
I mean, listen, everyone's entitled to think, but I think the thing is, so it's funny you say that, because I've met, there's been a handful of people that have come up to me at, like, convention stuff, like, yo, what's up, Matt? I fucking hate you.
They'll tell you that?
And I'm like, cool, like, I've never met you. And I'm like, okay, give me 2 minutes in my head, give me 2 minutes. And if you still hate me and I'm still not playing a character, then peace out, I'm good.
Yeah.
And 2 minutes, 3 minutes go by, and like, ah, you know what? Like, it's just, it's a character.
Yeah.
Every word. MVP is a friend of mine. He says an interesting thing to me. I think Ric Flair said it to him. I don't know. When you see Tom Hanks walking down the street, you don't go, yo, dude, Forrest Gump. You go, no, Tom Hanks.
Yes.
You see Ric Flair walking down the street, you don't go, yo, Richard Flair, whatever. Yo, Ric Flair.
Yeah.
We wrestlers are the only people that are their secret identity.
Yeah.
So if you hate that guy, he's doing his job. But please don't hate, you know, Matthew. I didn't, you know what I mean? I'm a regular dude in a fucking sweater. But yeah.
And you are actually wearing a sweater.
I am. I'm totally. Yeah.
Showing off the. Yes, thank you very much. When you're working for Impact in the role that you're working right now, do you think
you have, like, to wear a sweater?
It's part of the gimmick.
Yes.
Do you think, like, well, I'd like to do some commentary?
You know, it's funny, I can listen to Josh and Don continually, like, in my ear.
Yeah.
And people don't realize I learned from Josh. Josh was there when I got there. And when I started doing commentary, Josh and I came like this. If people knew what Josh does, and I put this tweet out, if you understand what Josh Matthews does for Impact, you would, every time you ever see him, you would shake his hand and say, hey, man, can I buy you a drink? Because, dude, he does so much.
Yeah.
And his commentary is innately good because he came from the factory. You know, he knows how to put things over. And Don is so unique in his references that people don't get, and his monotone and his pedigree in the sport. That's important. Someone has to have a pedigree in the sport to have credibility to the listener. So I look at those guys and I'm like, yo, right now they're good. If an opportunity pops up somewhere, fine.
Yeah. Do you miss it?
Sometimes what working with Impact has done for me though, look, there was a minute where I didn't not love it, but every match was kind of the same, and every, like, you know, I was stuck in this quagmire of calling not so good wrestling, not so great wrestling that wasn't done so well. I don't know. I have a degree. I promise. I know how to speak. But now I see.
A master's degree, right?
Yeah. Now I see, like, all the stuff these guys are doing on every channel. And, dude, I would love to call that stuff. Love to.
How did the role with Lucha come together?
Bleh. I'm sitting at home, lost my... No, because I have to take these memories back in the card catalog of my brain. Sitting at home. I'm on the right side of the couch. The fireplace is there. Bugging out because the WWE thing was over. And, you know, you do math. How much money do I have? How long can I live with this much money without having to work and die? And I was bugging a little bit. Mm. And for me, it's just for me, I go to, like, faith. Faith is, like, just my thing. Dude, and I prayed. I was like, please. I was like, if it's your will and it's something, give me an opportunity. Give me something. And I prayed that prayer, and I'm not being funny or whatever. It was like 45 minutes later, phone rings. It's Chris DeJoseph, who's a friend of mine from WWE, he's a writer or whatever. And he was straight up honest. He's like, hey, what are you doing? I'm like, sitting on the couch. What do you mean? Yeah. He's like, well, listen, he's like, we wanted Josh, and either Josh didn't want to do it or Josh couldn't do it. So you weren't our first choice, but seriously, that's what he said. He's like, if you can get on like a flight to LA tomorrow, I'll be there. And one thing in wrestling I was always taught, you know, yes is always your first answer. Mm. Even if you can't do it, just say yes and figure out a way, because if you're supposed to do it, it's going to be awesome. Yes. Got on the plane, flew out there, 6-hour flight, landed, got to the building. And I think it was Eric Van Wagner who came up and like shook my hand. He's like, yo, you're coming in on a pinch for us. We appreciate it.
Wow.
And right there, I was like, all right, do my job and leave him like wanting more. Costanza, like, just, you know what I mean? So, and I remember, dude, I wore like the stupid vest and the shirt. That's the first episode. Go back and watch that. In contrast to Vamp, it was just like an odd couple. Dun, dun, dun. But that's how that came about. That was crazy.
I'm actually surprised that they didn't have this planned out weeks or months in advance.
I think someone bailed. I think it was just as far as casting. Uh-huh. Someone couldn't do the role.
Yeah.
And then they called the next actor. And I was the actor that they called, and they got the role.
I was such a big Lucha Underground fan. And I thought that you did such amazing work there, not only carrying the story, but like making us care about what was going on in the ring too.
Yeah. Yeah. I appreciate that. That's like the nicest compliment you could say.
It's true. And I think that it was the chemistry that you and Vampiro had that I think that really carried the show, or the hatred that you guys had for each other. I don't know.
Come on. You have me on the ropes.
No, I know you guys really, you do like each other.
Oh, so anything in life, you have chemistry with someone or you just don't.
Sure.
Just you and I could not. We'll know when this is done. We'll see what it looks like.
Yeah.
Someone once explained to me something called a spiritual familiar, meaning if you believe in it, you knew this spirit somehow in your previous life, somehow in cosmic dust world. First time I met Vampiro was, I want to say, 2002 for MLW. It's just, hey, what's up? How are you? Cool, whatever. The next time I saw him was at Lucha Underground. And I'm telling you, when we sat down together, it's like, don't I fucking know you somewhere? Aren't you my brother? Something?
Huh.
Lights, camera, action, go. Working, you know, everything works. And then from there, we just became interesting friends.
What ended up happening with Lucha Underground?
To my knowledge, it started as needing a new home. And
do you mean physical home as the studio or on the TV station?
For presentation and platform. Okay. So I think it was,
El Rey. Yeah.
Or if anything, El Rey maybe couldn't finance the production, or that they couldn't agree to get the price of production down to a number, assuming that this particular company was comfortable with. I understand it was shopped around to some other places, whatever. I don't know what happened with the Netflix thing, but I honestly think it just comes down to money. Mm. And
blah.
It's because it. Because it just kind of
money and blah.
It just kind of yeah. It just kind of
blah. Went blah. It dribbled out. Yeah. It wasn't even good in the end.
And then you started having guys working elsewhere, and then you started having more guys working elsewhere, and it's like I guess this isn't a thing anymore.
You know when I so I guess all of us hold on to something we don't believe is true, and when I decided all right that's probably going to not be something was fractured when a lot of the talent in the company had like legal issues, and I tried not to. Pay attention to like gossip. I heard you did this. I don't know that. That to me was the first fracture. I was like, fuck, this ain't coming back.
Yeah.
At least not for now. So.
Right. Are you still wrestling?
Yeah. Yeah. I just wrestled from this taping a week ago at NYWC.
Oh, so you're still taking a bunch of indie bookings?
Not a bunch.
Okay.
No. I do like to be at home. I really do. I'm at a point in my life where I enjoy being at home.
I think that's interesting, though, because if there's like some younger fans watching this right now, they might not know Matt Stryker, the wrestler.
That's true.
And like, is there a divide in your
that
career?
Might be good for them.
No, come on. Is there a divide in your career when you started to realize that like, oh, I think people are recognizing me more as a commentator than they are a wrestler?
It's an interesting question. I guess I'd have to have like an awareness or cognition of when people... So when I get stopped, I get so I'm fucking socially awkward. Matt Stryker's like, hey, how you doing? Whatever. Matthew K. I'm super nice. Hey, how are you? And they go, Matt Stryker, what's your name? And people will always do this. They give me their full name, which is the weirdest thing in the world. It's the weird, like for a little kid. Hey, Matt Stryker. Hey, what's your name? Jeffrey Johnson. Oh, hey, Jeff. For a grown guy, like, hey, what's your name? Like, Donald Jenkins. Oh, hi, Donald. Nice to meet you. So I don't really take an inventory of how people approach that, but I could see how more would. There's a more widespread body of work for me as an announcer. So
also, you know, when you're an announcer, your voice is on the show for the entire show.
Yeah.
When you're a wrestler, you wrestle for a few minutes. See you next week.
So I can never really do like crank calls or anything because I know this voice. Who is this? So.
We also hosted NXT when it was in a very different
that was fun.
Version of what it was.
Yeah.
You did a lot.
Thanks.
That's great.
It's fortunate, you know, and I think in any walk of life, anyone that's, you're an accountant, you work at a gym, whatever, if you can learn how to learn, right?
Yeah.
You can do a lot of different things. So I just learned how, John Lauren and I said, I learned how to learn. And I just learned how to learn stuff. And that makes you versatile and valuable.
But you walk in the door as a wrestler.
Yeah.
When are you able to allow yourself or be allowed to start to learn those other things?
I took it upon myself. I didn't wait for anyone to go, okay, you're now allowed to go sneak to the back of the truck and stand behind the executive vice president who may or may not even know your name of production. And if he does turn around, he backs his chair up, he farts, he knocks a coffee on me. I'm fired. So no one said, yeah, go sneak around the back.
Yeah.
No one said it. I used to sit, so there's different rooms back in WWE backstage, and one of the rooms is called like pre-tapes, and then there's this audio room that just has all the audio that's going on in the building. Michael Cole and, you know, so-and-so's headset, whatever they're shooting over and things, sometimes even Vince's office. I would put those fucking head things on and just listen. No one said, go ahead, do that. It's okay. So yeah. I don't know. I just did it. I was weird. And I also didn't like to hang out and talk to people. I can go hide in this room and put on headsets, be like, oh, he's working. Leave him alone.
Well, do you...
I'm not working. I'm avoiding you.
Do you think your background in teaching made you want to be a student yourself in this stuff?
Yeah, definitely.
What exactly was it that you taught?
Social studies.
Okay. What age? What grade?
Grade 7 through 12. So it's just adolescent education and educational psychology, how people learn. I was always fascinated with that.
Huh. So. And then look at you.
Hey, and look at you.
A student.
A student.
So obviously the teaching job has to come to an end when WWE hires you?
It has to.
Did it?
Yeah. Yeah. No, it was a choice. Everything was happened for a reason. Again, back to faith. However I lost that one job, it coincided right with that WWE contract. Like that. So again, to me, divine wind and... I'll just jump in the boat and go for the ride.
With all the knowledge that you had in WWE and learning from a little bit here and there and everywhere, why didn't they renew your contract?
I mean, if you're asking me, you're asking them. So I watch a lot of things where people will say, oh, you know, well, they this, they that. So I put myself, my dad was smart to this for me. He said, put yourself in their shoes from business. So if you understand business and stocks, whatever, black is made money, red is lost money.
Sure.
What was I doing for them at that time? I was doing backstage interviews and maybe I was calling Main Event. Like, I don't even remember. I was doing stuff for like the app in its infancy. And they were paying me. I was there, you know, almost 10 years. So I was on like a second or third contract. I was doing well. Mm-hmm. For the amount of work, I was robbing them blind. So when they wanted to, they came up to renew the contract. If they would have said, listen, here's the straight up. You do this much work. We pay you this much. Mm-hmm. We'll try to find work for you, but we got to bring you down here. I'd say, okay.
Yeah.
You're WWE. I love you. Hold me. But they didn't give me that option. They just said, listen, we're not renewing. Mm. Like, I remember I had to go up for like a contract talk, and I mean, I was so young and stupid. I got put on a suit and I had to go to Stamford. And I've likened it before to that scene in Goodfellas where Joe Pesci walks in. I walked in and the guy I was supposed to meet with wasn't in the meeting. It was someone else sitting on a desk with Lex Matthew. Come in. Oh, fuck me. All right, cool. And he's like, yeah, we're not going to renew it. Da, da, da. That was a punch in the gut.
Especially they flew you to Connecticut to fire
you. I drove up.
Great. So they, yeah. So they bring you into the office to go, yeah, we're not going to keep you around anymore.
Cool. You could have called me.
Yeah.
But regardless, the opportunity to say, listen, here's business. Let's talk money.
Yeah.
You do this. We'll give you that.
Yeah.
Hey guys, thanks.
Yeah.
Still have a fucking job. I'm still having whatever. Da, da, da. So that was what it was. But I think that there's a reason. Again, I'm a faith guy. God took me from there for a reason. And now that I'm older, I can try to do inventory of the way I was, the person I was, the things that I was doing, and how they were negative to my life. Maybe sometimes it's better that I'm not there in that incarnation of it as I remember it.
Let's take a quick pause from this chat with Matt Stryker to thank our sponsor, Untuck It. And you ever wonder why traditional button-ups look so long and baggy? Well, that's because they weren't meant to be worn that way. Untuck It shirts were specifically designed to be worn untucked, hence the name. No matter your size or your shape, their shirts are the perfect untucked length. With more than 50 combinations, Untuck It shirts look great on tall, short, slim, and athletic guys, whatever your shape is, and no matter what your age is. And don't just take my word for it, even though I'm telling you this right now. Try it for yourself. Visit untuckit.com. Use the promo code BLUEWIRE for 20% off your first order. They even offer free shipping and returns on all orders in the U.S. That's untuckit.com, untuckit.com. The promo code is BLUEWIRE for 20% off your first order.
So you go from being on the road every single week,
yeah,
to now being at home. Yeah. You know, what was that transition like for you?
Well, at first, I had to get over the feeling of I'm a failure. I did something for them to say, we do not want you.
Yeah, yeah.
That's rejection. That's whatever. So, okay, let me deal with that internally and mentally. And I'll be honest, and I've spoken about it. I have to believe everyone has like just anxiety in situations, like that fucking inner monologue, that monkey on a unicycle banging cymbals in your head. And when you talk to people, you go somewhere. That's all the time for me. Maybe that's why fucking Vamp and I get along. So I had to navigate that. And then from there, my surrender goes to just a prayer. All right, listen, take me where you're going to take me. I'm alive. Thank God. Mm-hmm. I'm good. I've got some money. I've got a roof over my head. I got food in the fridge. I'm going to go sleep upstairs tonight. Okay, God, I want to see what I can do for you tomorrow.
Right.
That's where that's at.
It was faith something that was always part of your life from a young age?
Yeah. Yeah. I remember my dad he lived in a tall apartment building. He was out on a terrace in the morning early, and I must have woke up and went to look for him, and he was outside, and I saw his mouth moving. I'm a kid. He comes back in. I'm like, can I have gum? I've said this story before. And he's like, I don't have gum. What are you talking about? I was like, no, I saw you chewing gum outside. I wasn't chewing gum. I was talking. He lived on the 17th floor of a 17-story building over there. I'm like, who are you talking to?
Yeah.
So I was talking to God. I was like, what is that? Come, my son, sit upon my lap and let me tell you these tales. And the good thing about how he did it was he showed it to me. And then he let me, he never pushed anything. Mm. No one ever did. He's like, just, you want to go read about that, experiment, think about that? Go ahead. Mm. And from there, I just grew to, it's like organized religion. I couldn't tell you. I don't know. Stand up, sit down, six Hail Marys. Here's your bar mitzvah. You win. I don't know how it works, but whatever. And I'm not mocking it, but, but beyond all that, what I arrived, and then I started taking classes at college. What I arrived at is, regardless of what they tell you, you are, you're Muslim, you're Christian, you're Jewish. Do you believe in right and wrong? Do you believe in good and bad? Mm. Do you believe that there is some feeling between humans and animals and nature? Then, okay, that's what the world calls God. But to me, I was like, okay, you believe in that, good. Mm. How much you choose to do outside of that is on you. So that's what I started to develop. So faith has been there from that beginning.
Does that something that works into your wrestling in any sort of way?
Lord, grant me the strength to punch this man with an amazing Superman punch. I've seen guys pop.
I've seen guys pray before they go out.
But that, I think, is more for, I know for me, when I do it, it's A, oh my God, thank you so much that this is my life.
Oh, so this is gratitude. B, yeah.
I want to be safe, and I want him, usually him, to be safe. And I do this weird thing. I'm like, and please, if his family there, is anyone that's there where he can, you know, shine for them, let me. Johnny Rods is my trainer. So the term is jobber or carpenter. He's like the ultimate go in and lose guy.
Yeah.
You know, the guy who gets his introduction when you're not on television. But that's a very noble thing. What can I do for you? It's almost akin to the servant in most faiths, whether it be Jesus, whether it be Muhammad, whether it be Buddha. They have some type of servitude to something.
Right.
So how can I serve you in this match? So there's that. And then please don't let me fucking die. Every time some of these guys pick you up, dude, I'm not a big dude. You know, I'm not 6 feet tall. I mean, I'm like 215 now. But dude, when Bobby Lashley picks you up, all you can hope is to land right. And I mean, bless his heart, for his strength and stuff, he's such a professional where he just puts you where it's perfect. Mm.
I think one of the things that I appreciated so much about your commentary is you came across like such a fan. Like you were so, well, you were obviously very knowledgeable about what was going on, but you came across like genuinely interested in what was going on. And of course, the moment of like, I'm marking out, Stan, I'm marking out, bro. Yeah. Fans love that. What was the reaction from Vince or from production on that?
The only reaction I think I recall was Michael Cole. And the good thing about Michael Cole is he would always give you these like visuals. So it's either a wink or I don't matter. And that's you. Those are silent cues.
Sure.
And when I said that, he looked at me for a split second and then was like, cool, and went right back to it. So that was the only reaction I got. I think the reaction is more on the outside than on the inside.
I mean, people are still talking about it now.
I don't know. Cool.
And that was just that was in that moment. That was just a genuine reaction from you.
Yeah. 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 I'm just trying to think because so many of my, when I'm left to my own devices, I don't know. I'm all right. Most of the stuff that people like hate are things that were either fed to me or were mentioned in a meeting. And I'm not saying that's just to, you know, exonerate myself because a lot of times I do say stupid shit. But that one, yeah, was just an organic moment that I think people could relate to.
Yes.
We're all marking out, bro. So.
But I don't think people realize that a lot of time when you're on commentary, you are having stuff fed to you. And you're trying to call the match while someone is in your ear telling you what to say or suggesting
there's conversation going on.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's as, you know, I don't know, it's harmless as, hey, let's not forget that the story here is, you know, Jenny's arm.
Right.
And then sometimes it's, why would you say that about so-and-so's neck when the blah, blah, blah. And that's not the time for that conversation.
Yeah.
That conversation should come later. But I didn't really get a lot of that. But
I know from working in TV my entire career with an IFB in.
Excuse me.
Sorry. Yeah. My hair's not long enough to do that.
Yeah.
But with that in your ear, it's so hard to concentrate on what you're doing when there's another voice speaking to you.
So I had to, and don't ask me why, I think it was like a rib or a joke on me. I had to read teleprompter with an IFB in with someone talking to me.
Oh, that's so hard.
Don't ask me how, and I'm sure you do it too.
Yeah.
You don't know how you get through it. But at the end, you go back, you're like, yo, I did that, and I had a 96% you know, success rate. I maybe flubbed one line, or I missed a point somewhere. That's it.
I feel like in those situations, there's failure's not an option. in those situations, yeah, especially when you're live,
yeah,
you're reading make a teleprompter.
Happen. Make it happen.
You just have to. And if you flub up, you mess something up, you just make it sound like that's what you were supposed to be doing.
You have no choice because it's presentation. Television, just presentation. Just go out there and say some words and maybe we'll throw some graphics over your face and we're out.
That's right.
Here's some money.
In the job that you're in now, in the role that you're in now, what are some of the mistakes that maybe you see people making in the ring?
I was going to say, what are some of the mistakes you've made? And I was like,
how much time do you have?
But that's, it's interesting. My thought process went right there because making mistakes is great, are great. It's great. And we bemoan and lament. Oh, I shouldn't have done that. I shouldn't have done that. Dude, sometimes I love like seeing mistakes because if you can learn from them, you get better. Mistakes that I see out there, I don't think I can critique it as a whole. I think for the most part, it's just what anyone would say. It's not about, it's basic psychology. Basic psychology. You have to have an emotional investment in me. Mm. Otherwise, no matter what I do, you don't give a shit.
Right.
So that's the first thing. And how do you do that is with pacing. If guys would make believe, sorry, that sometimes some of those shots hurt more than they do. And sometimes the ones that fucking kill you don't even look like they were anything. But if a guy would sell just a touch more, there's still sympathy left in this world. Mm. The world's changing, but there's still sympathy. Humans still have a heart. So if you could play on that, your matches and the products will be so much better because instead of sitting here and watching it, we sit here. Oh, yeah. Dude, I love so-and-so. Yeah, as opposed to, I've seen Stryker. What is he going to do now? That rolling armbar thing? Okay, cool. All right. Point to your head. I know you're smarter than me. Hey, listen, can we go? Yeah.
Well, if your brain immediately did go to the mistakes that you've racked up, what do you think is the biggest mistake that you've made and what did you learn from it?
In this producing thing?
Just in general, maybe.
In life?
Sure. Or maybe it's in the ring. Maybe it's in commentary.
Okay.
Okay.
I think biggest mistake or one of for me at this point in my life, and if it could help anyone, hold your tongue 2 seconds longer than you want to.
Hmm.
Even the fool seems wise when he is silent. William Regal says, a still tongue keeps a wise head. There are times where I literally, in situations where people are talking, and I want to jump in. I want to say, I go, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Because it gives me time to think. What was I going to say? Process what they said. Let them finish what they're going to say. And it just allows me to be a better part of the interaction as opposed to jumping in and missing everything they were going to say.
Hmm. You can't do that on commentary, though.
You know something? You can. JR taught me. There are times, Vince, too. It's called laying out. There are times where silence tells a brilliant story because the natural sounds of the ring. Hearing Michael Elgin's clothesline thud against Eddie Edwards' chest tells everyone in the world, independent of language, culture, race, creed, diversity, that shit hurt.
Yeah.
And there's nothing I can say that's going to, you know, expand on that.
Yeah. Are you still teaching?
At this moment?
I mean, at this moment?
I just finished a degree in educational psychology. So there are opportunities if I, you know.
What kind of degree?
So it was a master's in educational psychology. It's,
wow.
It's good. I mean, I had to get it and I wanted to get it. So it allows me to like pursue other things. And once you start getting like certificates and degrees and da-da-da, they go here, you know, like money. Oh, just put on this shirt and point to this and say this. Cool. I can go home. Cool. But yeah, so that's fun. It's fun to see how people learn and how kids are coming up these days. It's cool.
Do you mean the opportunities to maybe be a professor at a college or something?
I mean, halfway there with the
you thing. Do wear the sweater. Yeah.
I thought about it and there's like, I want to say there's over a dozen, 4 years and 2 years in a community colleges or in my area. So if you imagine, you can imagine Matt Stryker retires to be like a professor of European history at Nassau Community College. And I teach Tuesday and Thursday. What do I teach? Let me think. You know what?
Yeah, what would you
teach? I teach 2 to 4 now in the summer. The summer, I'll teach summer and I'll go to the beach. Yeah, I'll teach 2 to 4. I let you out at 3:45. Don't tell anybody.
What a professor.
Maybe we do Friday 1 to 3, but sometimes on Fridays, on Thursdays, I'm like, yo, listen, we're not coming in. Everything's email.
I appreciate that these are all afternoon classes.
Yeah, yeah. You want to take a 7:45? Everyone's breath smells.
Any college student watching this right now knows you don't go to a class before like 10 a.m.
But I'm just saying, like anything to me that happens early in the morning, I feel that I smell this
mixture in the air of like hot hunger and coffee breath. And no matter what you're saying, who you are, you're so fresh out of the shower. I smell your cologne just a little bit more. Your hair gel. Mornings are very weird to me because the senses are heightened, and I'm a germaphobe. People are, I don't know. I don't want to breathe your air. Fuck. I just, you know, some people smell. Have bad breath.
All right, so you're going to have afternoon classes.
To avoid that.
But for real, do you think with the extra education you've been getting, the opportunities, are they in education? Are they in teaching? Or are they in other jobs?
It's a great question, because I think the goal was to let me have as many avenues of opportunities as I can, because I was once at a point where the only avenue really closed. And I had to, like, you know, literally fall to my knees and turn to prayer. And in that reward of here's a new avenue, something said to me, yo man, dig out a few more avenues so that if these close off, wrestling goes away, that you have these. And right now I'm fortunate, thank God, that these avenues are open and these avenues are open, and I can take streams of income or experience and get to where I want to be in my life.
So it's like you said, you've learned to learn.
Yeah. Fuck, it's the only thing I've learned.
So if we, what degrees do you have?
I have degrees. So what is it? It's a bachelor's in secondary ed history, and then it's the master's in educational psychology.
So there's another, you know, Luchasaurus talks about having a master's degree. Yeah. Matt Stryker has a master's degree too.
It doesn't mean anything with online courses these days. You can do it too.
I guess anyone could do it if they wanted to. Yeah. Who was it that approached you about the current job that you have now?
Oh, that's Scott D'Amore. And it's, you see the same people, the saying in wrestling is, you see the same people going up the ladder as you do going down. You know, when you're on your way up, you should be nice people, because you ain't going to be there all the time. You don't know how high up that ladder you're going to get.
Sure.
And if you're a dick, you're coming tumbling down. Scott and I have, you know, always gone along swimmingly. And he's always tried to find positions for me at Impact. And then finally this came a boot. And it seems to work, because I think you kind of gotta know wrestling, mm-hmm. know what the announcers are doing, know what the TV audience is gonna see. And time is a big thing. Yeah. You know, in any kind of televised thing, segments of time, as we look at the clock, are important. So those things, all that comes from Scott D'Amore.
And was he the one who trained you how to do this?
Trained you? Listen, they go, hey, do you think you can? And you go, yeah, sure, I can.
Because yes is always the first answer in wrestling.
But to his credit, sometimes being left to your own devices is a good thing. Sink or swim. Mm. And having the knowledge to do it. And I was super fortunate to have certain people like the director, Dave Zahadi, and you know, like I said, Josh Matthews and Jimmy Jacobs, and the relationship with Scott, and being able to talk to people. And there's a few other guys in the truck that are just so valuable. So you learn to learn. Hey, how do I need to learn how to do this? Instead of going, excuse me, can you press that button for me so I can talk to Josh? It's, hey man, you got 2 seconds. Can you show me which button allows me to talk to Josh? Oh, you got to flip that one over there. Well, why'd you do that? Well, you got to put on monitor 3. You got to make sure his monitor's on. And you got to flip. You know what? That fucking makes sense. It doesn't
have
to be a circle.
Right, right.
Give a man a fish, he'll eat for a day. Teach a man a fish, he'll eat for a lifetime. Yeah. Thank you for teaching me to fish. Peace out. Yo, Josh, it's Matt. Yada, yada, yada.
Yeah, yeah. So you're the guy in the announcer's ears.
Yes, now I'm the guy fucking yelling. No, I don't yell ever.
It's all come full circle here.
And interestingly enough, though, sometimes things happen in your life and you say, hey, I always want to be like that. Or, you know what? I'm never going to be that way. So some of the things that I've heard more than I've experienced, to be honest, some things I didn't like, I am very aware of not being that guy here. Sort of, hey, you know, excuse me, camera 2, or please, thank you.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I was raised, say grace, say ma'am, say thank you. That's just me. Hmm. So I think it's nice. I don't know. Fuck you.
If you've learned to learn, what do you think is the biggest lesson that wrestling has taught you?
You're proud of that question. You gave that one.
I just came around to that one. Yeah.
Wait, what was the question?
What do you think is the biggest wrestling lesson that you've learned? What's the biggest life lesson that wrestling's taught you?
I mean, that's definitely that first one of the still tongue keeps a wise head.
Yeah, okay.
But, fuck, there's so many. I look back on it, it blew by, and I was super fortunate.
It's not done, though.
It's not. It's not. But I mean, listen, it's half my life. Literally half my life. I've been doing this, it'll be 22 years. Like, yeah.
half of my existence is this in some regard. I have to have some awareness of how has that changed me as a human being from before I ever got into it.
Yeah.
How'd that change 7-year-old Matthew? I started watching when I was 7. So maybe I did this metamorphosis, this change from caterpillar to butterfly has been this you know, journey. And now I have to say, well, how much more time do I have? I have no idea. No one does. And will this thing be with me my entire time? Or will there be a portion of my life where that was? So yeah, I mean, fuck, I'm lucky and I'm grateful. Not the biggest guy, not the best wrestler. I could talk.
Yeah, I could talk.
And if that's enough, thank God. But kid comes from fucking Queens, New York, and does that and wrestles Kurt Angle and all that shit. To me, it's got to be, I just give it up to, I don't understand it. Thank you, God. What can I do with this opportunity to serve you? Mm-hmm. And I think that I look back, a lot of times people come up to me, dude, I talk to a lot of kids, a lot. And when you say like stupid shit, like, hey man, stay off drugs. Yo, don't, beer's bad for you. All right, I'll see you, man. Do good in school, okay? Do well. That means more to them than their parent telling it to them every day.
Yeah.
So if there was one kid that was like, you know what? I'm not going to do heroin because Matt Stryker told me not to. Cool.
There's the big lesson. Don't you?
You know what I mean? That's what we got.
But I also think that I think your character worked so well when you first came into WWE because it was so much of who you were. You know, it was, you were basically teaching people. And I think that because you were so good at that, it then made your character.
The jury's still out on that last part.
It made your character work that much better.
I think to Vince McMahon's credit, to Stephanie's credit, they borrow from real life because it's the easiest thing to emulate. A lot of times, and you see it now with a lot of the wrestlers, they look great and they're awesome. But when they're asked to be this character, it's hard to watch. I'm embarrassed for them. And when I get you the 23rd in Shreveport, it's going to be your end. Like, okay, I get it. Yeah. Fuck, does everything have to be so like that? And the lighting cue, and you hit your pose, and you say your phrase, and you wear your t-shirt. I don't know. There's a part of that that I think is just feels wonky. I don't know what the hell I was talking about.
No, but it makes sense, though, because for you, it wasn't wonky, because it was like, oh, you just want me to take this classroom type persona. And then turn it up to 11.
Fucking 11.
And kind of act like an asshole.
That's it. And they let me write a lot of my own, like, pieces.
And that very rarely happens.
That's Stephanie. I was fortunate. After, like, a second or third one, I remember I was working with Dusty Rhodes and Paul Heyman in Buffalo, New York, locked away in a room working on a segment for, like, .com. But sometimes you look back and you're like, either A, that was a test, or B, I just happened to be fucking locked in a room with Dusty Rhodes and Paul Heyman working on, like, are you kidding? I'm going to come out so much differently than I went in.
Yeah.
And if you look at the learning tree of wrestling, which is my favorite thing to do, but Paul learned from Dusty, right? So Tommy Dreamer is one of my dearest friends. So Tommy learned from Paul. Paul learned from Dusty. Dusty learned from Eddie Graham. And Eddie Graham is arguably one of the greatest bookers in all the world. So when I think about that, I was in a room with these two fucking dudes.
Yeah.
After that night, somebody was like, all right, you can write stuff, submit it. We got to approve it. And we can move from there. And I had fun with that.
Man.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
Wow. Yeah. I've talked to so many different people that talk about how great Dusty was and how much Dusty developed their characters. It's like he was just so special.
That's the right word. Dusty reminded me of my dad. Dusty had a soul. Like a soul. You felt, you believed that he loved you to death. When he hugged you, he hugged you. He didn't, yo, what's going on, yo? Yeah, he didn't give you that hard, but you were enveloped in Dusty, that love. And yeah, he definitely was a special human being. Yeah.
When you look back at your career, what's the one match that you really love that really stands out for you?
So the right answer is, you know, the stuff with Kurt Angle.
Sure.
At the end of the day, I will be a wrestler, and I'm coaching junior high wrestling at one of the local high schools by me. So, you know, all that stuff has always been in my DNA. So the fact that I was able to go in there with him and roll to the point where he would, you know, allow me to make it look like I was hurting him for a little while. Got him, right? Fucking ankle lock. But after a while, you have to get better just touching him, yeah, touching his robe. But there are other matches that people may not. So there was this guy, Josh Daniels, in New York and New Jersey when I was first starting out. We wrestled each other every weekend, and it's not right, but we beat the fuck out of each other in a loving way. And we just had these matches that were great. And then I had a match with Low Ki once, who to me still to this day, and he also had a hand in training me 22 years later. The world should know his character, his talent, his ability to captivate, the ability for you to put down the remote and everything professional wrestling is supposed to be, Low Ki can bring you for not just 8 to 12 minutes. Yeah. He can bring it for like 30, 45, 60 minutes, and that character is so real, and it's one of the last ones. So match I had with him also stands out.
He works in such a believable way.
Because it's real enough to not be considered what it's just this. He's special.
Yeah,
he has some special people in the world. I'm not saying Ki, if you're out there, he's hitting you. And there are times where if this is the place where you're supposed to hit him, and you're not there in a way that is believable, you're not hitting him. Even though we talked about it in the back, I was supposed to hit you. Oh, you left me standing there for 16 seconds.
Your voice isn't deep enough
to be. I will kick you now. And to me, that commitment to the integrity of what this sport still is and what it was in a way founded on was bastardized for a while, but has and will always be about. It's just that suspension for one little second.
Mm-hmm.
That, yo. Either A, if I ran into him out on the street, I wouldn't want to fuck with him.
Mm-hmm.
And B, he's kicking that guy's ass.
Mm-hmm.
And that guy's got to kick his ass back. To me, Low Ki is one of the few that has maintained that throughout the trajectory of his career.
Mm-hmm.
He's never departed from that. He never, you know, even when he did Caval, he was never fun, Low Ki. No, he wouldn't.
Yeah,
he would
never
compromise his integrity for his commitment to the integrity of the sport. And I always admired that.
I think that anytime Low Ki's in the ring, all eyes are on him because, you're right. He does some special work in there.
Yeah.
What's your take on everything that's going on in Impact Wrestling right now? I feel like you guys are making some real waves.
Yeah, I think it's the ability to think forward and to understand that while the people. This is the thing that gets me. They'll say three ways to talk about wrestling in a promo. And it's my favorite because you'll see some of these wrestlers, you know, they get into their promo stance and they'll either say industry or business. In this industry, I'm the top guy. Okay. Or, you know, I'm going to get you out of this business. Sport. I think Impact understands that it can be sport, and the ebb and flow of the storyline of sport has to develop based off of the ability of the athlete.
Hmm.
So with guys like Michael Elgin and a guy who's become one of my favorites, Josh Alexander, he's, again, in the vein of the Kurt Angle, and I grew up loving William Regal, Fit Finley, Dean Malenko, you know, these guys, Josh Alexander's right there. You have to think about what it means for the wrestling. The wrestling is very good right now in Impact, and that's what first thing I noticed.
No, and I think that...
Not that it wasn't then, but it's, you know.
Yeah, and I think that... I mean, Tessa Blanchard made history, and I think that it's not the men's championship or the women's championship, it's the world championship, and Tessa's one of the best wrestlers in the world.
See, that's the thing, and when you look at it as a sport, from an athletic point of view, from size and weight and whatever, then you would just have to put Tessa in a category of world champions, independent of gender, that are at her height, at her weight, with her style.
Sure.
And I mean, immediately, I mean, I would think maybe a younger American Dragon, Bryan Danielson, you know, a different kind of style, but still the same make and mold. Mm-hmm. And look at it as an athlete, forget gender. And other wrestlers, not so much the style, but Jody Fleisch. You know, think of the smaller, thinner wrestler that was still incredibly effective. Zack Sabre's a little taller, but he could also be a version of a Tessa. So she has the abilities. The thing about her, I think, is there's that. There's two words that are coming to my mind. I can't use either of them because I have four sisters. But I'll use one. She has bitch in her. And that's a little something that if you want to put it on the gender thing, man can have, I'm a dick, But what do you? What would you less rather deal with? Lack of it. Yeah, I don't want to deal with that guy. He's a dick. Or, yeah, yeah, I don't want to deal with it. She's a bitch. So there you go. And I have four sisters, and I love
it's just
the three
it's
that
a,
are alive remaining. So.
It's a certain,
and the last one. I love you too. I miss you.
It's a certain aggression that that Tessa brings. A certain, obviously, passion that she brings. Yeah.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think that is an endearing word also to describe her. I think
it's the right word.
Yeah.
No, you have to search for the right word.
Yeah. I've really enjoyed this.
Have
conversation.
You?
Yeah.
I'm happy.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I was a little nervous too at the beginning. Yeah.
Why? Tell me things about me. You ever guess people that you have to be aware of that in casual conversation, I often look for when people fish for things.
Yeah.
So a lot of times some people are great about it. They can bring a conversation back to being about themselves.
Sure.
And sometimes in wrestling, you see that with like wrestlers and stuff. So that just reminded me of that.
No, there are definitely times in those wrestling conversations when you're like, uh-huh. Okay. Yeah. You know. Matt Stryker, thank you so much.
I appreciate it.
Yeah, I appreciate you.
Well, there we go, my friend. Thanks for hanging out with me and hanging out with Matt Stryker for this one. If you're listening right now, snap a screenshot, tag me, tag Matt Stryker. Let us know what you thought about this. Let us know what stood out the most for you. And in case you're wondering, no, I am no longer Chris Van Beard. Yeah, if you've been following me on Instagram or if you watched my last interview on YouTube with Excalibur, I've had a beard for the last 30 days. And if you're a guy, you know that you can't just shave the beard off like boom, you can't just shave it off like that. You gotta shave it down. Have some fun with it. So I shaved it down into ridiculous sideburns, a goatee, a Hulk Hogan mustache, a Freddie Mercury / Rick Rude mustache, and now I'm Chris Van clean shaven. But check it all out. At Chris Van Vliet, you'll see the ridiculousness that I'm talking about on there. So big thanks to Matt for joining me for this chat. Big thank you to you as well. I think we learned a lot in there. I think that we figured out, you know, Matt's whole path to how he got into WWE, Lucha Underground, where he's at right now, his whole mindset about everything, which I love. It's amazing. Speaking of mindset, have you heard of the author Simon Sinek? He wrote the book called Start With Why, which I highly recommend. But I saw this quote from him earlier, which really spoke to me today, especially if you're someone who like can't enjoy a Sunday because you know that Monday's coming up and you got to go to a job that you don't like. Or if you're one of those people that when you're walking down the halls at your job and someone says, hey man, how you doing? And you go, well, it's Thursday, because you don't want to be there. That shouldn't be the way that it is. You shouldn't have to dislike your job. So this quote speaks to that. Working hard for something we don't care about is called stress. Working hard for something we love, it's called passion. Boom. What are you passionate about this week? Let me know. At Chris Van Vliet. Got some big interviews coming up. We will talk to you guys soon.